Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you that views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, we were going to have a special guest this evening, but I think we'll just hold off and do open lines. If you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But let's just start talking about what we know about the oil crisis, because this certainly is influencing everybody within the reach of my voice today, whether they're in the United States or throughout the world. We find the price of gasoline is going up. It's having a profound impact over in Europe. Now, certainly gasoline's approaching $10 a gallon there in Great Britain, and $7 or $8 a gallon in many places in Europe, and it's of course I paid I think $4.50 a gallon, pretty close to $4.50 a gallon recently when I filled up this last Saturday. So there is a definite problem as far as the oil price is concerned, and the question is, why is the price going up? Well, certainly our leaders are back in Washington, D.C. Oh, they want to sue the Saudis. We're going to sue the Saudi Arabians. You have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that we only get 14% of our oil from Saudi Arabia. Most of our oil comes from Canada. It comes from Mexico. It comes from Nigeria. It comes from Venezuela. And a very small part of our oil actually comes from Saudi Arabia. In fact, about 2 million barrels of oil a day. Now, remember, the United States currently is consuming about 20 million barrels of oil a day. And about 2 million barrels come down the Alaska pipeline and then is transported to Japan. Why don't we use it here? Oh, we couldn't use it here. The sulfur level is too high. We don't know how to refine that oil. The Japanese are so much smarter. They can use this high sulfur oil. And ladies and gentlemen, this, like everything else we hear, is simply a lie. And the lie is that there's no more sulfur in the oil that's coming down from Alaska than in every other place. We can certainly refine this. But you have to understand, the people who rule the world distribute the oil. Most of the oil from Saudi Arabia goes to Europe, and we are going to guarantee they have oil. We're going to guarantee that communist China has oil. We're going to guarantee that Japan has oil. And, of course, this whole thing about Saudi Arabia raising the price of oil is simply a diversion. Well, right now, let's go ahead, and we've got Wayne calling from St. Louis. Hi there, Wayne. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. I'm sitting here in St. Louis watching the floods this evening.
Oh, boy.
All the levees and everything, and on the TV, and I got out my shortwave radio and started listening to your program. I had no idea where you were or what country you were in or anything, but I liked what you were saying. And you opened your show with illusion is what most people assume is reality.
Right.
And that delusion is really, it's incredible. I mean, what you were saying, I couldn't hear every bit of it on my radio, but reality is what most people don't really know what's going on.
You're right.
And with this political, I don't even know what type of show you have, really. But what you said I thought was very profound, because I think this political season is so full of delusion, and everybody's falling for the deluded part of our country.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Well, I hope you'll start listening regularly. We are RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to us 9 hours a day on the Internet, or you can listen certainly 5 hours a day to our live programs. And we do hope, of course, that you're going to be able to begin to understand that basically we're trying to teach people about what's going on. We do a lot of programs, certainly just informative, like on finances and health, but certainly on geopolitics. But, of course, we're trying to convince people that we're really involved in a spiritual battle that's being fought on a political, ideological, cultural, health, financial battlefield. Hey, I've got my regularly scheduled guest who just came on, but I appreciate so much your calling. I hope you'll become a frequent listener and maybe even a frequent caller.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
God bless. And thanks so much. And let's go right now to John Quirk. Of course, John has been involved with intelligence for many years. He's now retired, but he still has connections all throughout the world and of course, a wonderful source of information. He's just recently back from Central Asia, and we just want to get his take on what is really going on. Of course, the question arises, is the current administration, the Bush administration, going to launch us into some sort of a suicidal or war with Iran at the present time? Certainly, I don't like the Iranians, but I think the last thing we need with a broken military such as we have, if you read the book, Wiser in Battle by Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, he will tell you that the American military just doesn't have the forces. We're having to send these same men back tie for tour after tour after tour. Some of them on their third tour going over there. And these are people from the National Guard. They didn't sign up for this. They thought they were going to defend their state. They didn't understand, of course, that they were going to be taken away from their families, you know, at a year at a time, 12, 14 months at a time, again and again and again. Our military, if you listen to what our generals are saying, our military is broken, and now they're talking about expanding the war. Well, you don't want to hear what I have to say. So let's hear what John Quirk has to say. John, thank you so much for being with us again.
Good evening, Stan. It's always good to be here. Yeah, the whole situation in Iran lately has been very confusing from all different sides, from the Israeli side, the Bush administration, policymakers. Former ambassador to the UN, John Bolton, yesterday, and he's been a hawk calling for military action, stated that he does not believe Bush will take military action. He believes the Israelis will, and he even projected sometimes between November 4th and January 20th the Israelis will take action. On the other hand, Bolton went on to say yesterday that if there's an Obama victory, if Mr. Obama is elected, that would rule out any military action by the Israelis because they might fear the results given the approach Obama's taken to foreign policy. So it's a very weird situation, and it all really ended in one way and started in another way last December when the CIA basically sandbagged the president. The CIA came out and said...
Hold that thought right there, John. We're going to bring our stations back on board. Okay. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this evening is John Quirk. And for those of you who don't know John, John has been involved with intelligence for many years. He's a lifetime of intelligence, connections throughout the world, and right now he's retired, but he still has opportunities to travel to Central Asia, and he's just come back from Central Asia a few weeks or so ago. And he certainly, of course, is one of the leading experts on what's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in Venezuela, and he's kind enough to come onto our program. He was just saying that the situation over in the Middle East really is very, very confusing, and that John Bolton, former ambassador to the United Nations, has said that he anticipates, and this is Bolton anticipating, an attack on Israel sometime between November 4th and January 4th, just before the new administration is inaugurated, whoever that may be. Now, John, please don't hesitate to say or repeat what you said the other day, because this is an entirely different audience, a much larger audience, and so you go ahead with your interpretation.
Well, I think after the CIA questioned the CIA basically sandbagged President Bush. President Bush and Cheney had plans to use military action against Iran. They didn't really care about world opinion. They had made guarantees and promises to the Israelis, and the CIA came out in December and said that the Iranians have stopped all kinds of activities regarding weapons-grade uranium production. Now, recently, everybody has said that has completely changed, that the Iranians are, in fact, accelerating weapons-grade production. The International Atomic Energy Commission, which has not been real friendly to the United States, is trying to put more pressure on Iran. They said Iran is not giving them a lot of information. David Albright, who is probably the leading expert on Iran and nuclear weapons development, said the Iranians have increased their production by 50%. So what we have now is we have the continual failure of diplomacy. We have the unbelievable stubbornness of the Iranians. The Iranians have just been hit by all kinds of new sanctions. President Sarkozy of France has become very pro-U.S. and warned the Iranians the other day. He just made a trip to Israel. Israel went on massive maneuvers last week, and they were training 100 pilots flying F-16s and F-15s how to knock out Iranian targets. The Russians, as you know, because you've kept an eye on this, have accelerated the supply of anti-aircraft missiles to Iran, new submarines. Iran has signed an agreement with Venezuela that if the United States attacks Iran, the Venezuelans will probably cut off or reduce a lot of oil to hurt us financially. So, and then you've got the whole hodgepodge of the election coming up. McCain, several months ago, made guarantees to American Jewish leaders and Israel that he would take military action against Iran. Obama, on the other hand, has said that he would prefer to have high-level talks without any preconditions, which, of course, makes the Israelis very nervous. So there's a lot of other things going on that the Pentagon is worried about, the fact that we could be overextended in Iraq, the fact that oil would be certainly interrupted and probably could go to somewhere between $10 and $12 a barrel.
You're talking about gasoline going to $10 to $12 a gallon.
Yes, I mean $10 to $12 a gallon. And there are rumors that President Bush even has commissioned a group to study the efficacy of gas rationing in the United States, which, you know, may not be a bad idea. We did it in World War II. But so the situation is very confused. It's confused economically because of the trouble we're having with gas prices and natural disasters and floods and fires and what that could do to the economy. China is also taking down more and more oil, and there's lots of rumors that the Chinese, who basically are supporting us in many ways financially, may start to demand payment back by the United States, while at the same time their economy is in danger of declining if they don't keep getting the oil supplies that they need. And there's just, there's trouble in Latin America with Chavez and his funding of left-wing groups and his threatening to cut oil off to the United States. So there's economic problems, there's political problems, there's a presidential election, but I know that the Bush administration, not everybody in the administration, but the hawks, if you will, want to take military action or do something to support Israel in an extra way if we don't take action to support Israel, possibly protect their borders, or possibly, now some people think that the United States is looking for an excuse to actually launch attacks against the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, who the United States and the U.S. Congress last year voted as a terrorist group. So I think what you're going to see is you're going to see more complaints by the military regarding Iran. You're going to see more aggressive maneuvers on the part of the Israelis. I don't think anything's going to happen for a lot of reasons until after the November election. And the experts seem to think if Obama is elected and the United States takes a lead position, President Bush will order a military attack on Iran. If McCain is elected, he may not do that. He may pass it on to McCain, or the Israelis, who have been very, very nervous about Iran, may in fact attack Iran somewhere, as Bolton said, between November 4th and the January inauguration.
But, of course, the thing that really concerns me, John, is the fact that if Israel were to attack Iran, Hezbollah, which is certainly is simply a subdivision of a surrogate of Iran, would launch, and they have probably 20, some people say as much as 40 or 50,000 missiles, very sophisticated missiles, probably largely made in Russia. They would launch those on Israel and simply destroy Israel. Iran wouldn't have to retaliate. Hezbollah would wipe out Israel. So, you know, everything going on over there really doesn't make any sense from a logical point of view. Israel certainly doesn't like a nuclear Iran, but, I mean, does she dare really to launch an attack when Hezbollah, sitting immediately to the north, has been re-equipped with far more missiles and more sophisticated missiles than ever before?
Yeah, well, that's right. The Iranian foreign ministry said the other day that if Israel did attack Tehran, Tehran would launch a devastating response to any attack. And I think what's happened today is that we've given the Iranians too much time. They've outmaneuvered us. They've rejected our diplomacy. They've increased all of their agreements with Venezuela, which is kind of our soft underbelly. I mean, a lot of people think Chavez is a buffoon, but I don't. He's just purchased several Russian diesel electric submarines, these Kilo-class submarines that are very difficult for the United States to detect. Russia and Belarus are finishing a missile defense shield in Venezuela. Chavez just came back from Moscow a few weeks ago, and he purchased all kinds of crazy Russian attack helicopters, troop carriers, more ammunition, more small arms. And the Iranians have also, as you said, resupplied Hezbollah, not only with the rockets that were launched to parts of Israel when Israel went into Lebanon, but they've given the Hezbollah a very sophisticated weapons with more range and more power that can hit all of Israel.
But, of course, are those Iranian-produced or are those Russian-produced missiles?
It's a combination of North Korean, Pakistani, and I believe Chinese technology, but most of the parts come from Russia or China.
Right.
But the technology is North Korean, Pakistani, but they're assembled. They're these Shabbat missiles. And they have a range of anywhere from 1,500 kilometers, they say now, to 3,000, with TNT or very sophisticated warheads. They see that as a real plus that they would be able to really launch these against Israel.
And it's really, I mean, Israel's a very, very small nation. At one point, it's only about 8 miles between the demarcation line and the Mediterranean Sea. And it may be fairly long, but, I mean, that many missiles would simply wipe out Israel. I mean, you know, without divine intervention, I don't see how any way that Israel, from a logical military point of view, could survive such an attack. And yet, if the United States were to attack Iran, I think Iran would take reprisals on Israel as well as our troops locally there in the Middle East and in the Near East. So it's sort of a lose-lose situation. I don't think most people realize the seriousness of the current military situation or the terrible potential that this would actually create, because, of course, if the Iranians were attacked, they might very well retaliate against the Sunnis. The Iranians are Shia, Saudi Arabians are Sunni, and, of course, they could wipe out their loading docks and really cut off the oil to Europe, and then we would have a real shortage here in the United States, because we'd certainly see that Israel got their oil one way or the other, even if we had to take it away from the American people. So, I mean, it's a lose-lose situation for us, no matter what happens, isn't it?
Well, yes, and the Iranians also, they have 500,000 troops, and they could choose a direct confrontation with the United States troops in Iraq. They could also attack us in Afghanistan. They share a long, long border with Afghanistan. They have missiles, as I mentioned, capable of reaching all of our allies in the Gulf region.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Saudi Arabia.
Go right ahead, John.
So they also could do a selective or a surgical oil embargo on our allies. They supply, I think it's 70% of all oil going to Asia, including, I think, Japan. So they could do an oil embargo there. They could even threaten China to put more pressure on the United States. They have a lot, the Iranians have a lot of options. They don't have a sophisticated Navy or Air Force, but they are, as you've mentioned before in your other shows, and they're buying more and more of these sophisticated, very sophisticated anti-aircraft missile systems from the Russians. They'll be deployed probably in another month or so. But the big problem is, there's two big problems that the West has to face with Iran. One is that the Iranians, even the worst intelligence, says the Iranians have about 3,000 centrifuges and that they could produce enough nuclear material for a bomb within 18 months or be able to have that ready quickly if they had to produce a bomb, which is also a threat. The other thing is the Iranians have a fundamentalist, very extremist, almost cult-oriented leadership in Iran. It's not the people of Iran. It's not the young people. But this fundamentalist Shia interpretation of the Quran, and if you study, you know, I'm not an expert on it, but if you study the relationship between the Sunnis in Saudi Arabia, as you mentioned, and the Shia have been put down for hundreds of years, and now they're getting power. They have a revitalization in Iraq. Their Shias are in Iran. There is a very Shia minority in Saudi Arabia. That they see any kind of threat to them, any undermining, as a threat to their religion. So recently, the West has imposed more sanctions. The Europeans, I think it was last week, froze the major Iranian bank in Europe, froze their assets. There's more sanctions against them. The negotiations seem to be failing on both sides. So these are all kind of, if you study history, these are all kind of the precursors to war. And it defies, as you said, it defies logic. Nobody's going to win. I mean, I don't see the American economy winning in something like this.
Well, I think even more than that, of course, if you just stop and you think about the implications of what's going to happen if we do actually go to war. Now, actually, when you put sanctions on a country, as we're doing, this really is an act of war. They're talking about a blockade, a military blockade of Iran. That is an act of war. Is it any wonder that Iran is buying, diesel submarines and sophisticated torpedoes that could take out certainly our as many of our warships, and whether or not we'd be able to evade those sophisticated Russian torpedoes that they're buying? I don't know, but I would be very, very concerned that no matter what happens, I mean, we're moving into very, very dangerous water, and I don't think the average American really realizes how close we are to seeing the whole of the Middle East going up in a sheet of flames.
Yes, and that's what the Iranians have said. They said that they will turn that whole region into fire. They've said this the other day.
Hold that thought, John. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's John Quirk, who has really connections all throughout the world, but specifically the Middle East and in Venezuela, where he has very, very strong family ties. Under any circumstances, why, we're just talking about the insanity of what's going on in the Middle East, the fact that the Europeans are now beginning to freeze the assets of a large Iranian bank over in Europe. That's an act of war, ladies and gentlemen, when you begin freezing some of these funds, and then there's talk about maybe a military blockade of Iran. That's an act of war. People say it really couldn't happen. It's illogical, but so little of what's going on today is really logical. But think of the implications as far as Israel facing a barrage of somewhere between 25 and 40,000 missiles from Hezbollah there in Lebanon if there is an attack against Iran. Think of the implications as far as our 150,000 boys over there stationed in Iraq with the Iranians armed with missiles who could hit their enclaves, could wipe out our embassy there. So think of the implications if one of our major carriers were to sink. And as you pointed out, this is not the Iranian people at all, but it is the leadership, the radical mullahs, who seem to almost have an apocalyptic attitude. In other words, they would sort of believe that if they could bring on this this terrible, terrible war, it would bring back the Mahdi, would bring back their messiah, as it were.
That's the problem in many ways of dealing with one culture versus another culture, and the way we think about things. We think, Americans often think in a very compartmentalized, logical way, and you try diplomacy, and then you pull the military action out of the hat. You know, and Americans are very aggressive, and Israel has been lobbying for U.S. help, but so have the Saudis, the Turks, the Egyptians. A lot of the Arabs want in Iran to be the regional power, but without Shia fundamentalism. They do not like the current power structure in Iran. And that's, the Saudis have been lobbying heavy, even more than the Israelis. The American option is, there is an option for the Americans to sit back and let Israel, you know, Israel's launched two other strikes against countries. They launched attacks against the nuclear facilities in 1981 against Iraq. There was a little uproar and then it died down. And then they just took out these huge construction facilities in Syria that everyone believes the North Koreans were helping them develop nuclear weapons. So that's the second one, and nobody really, you know, squawked about that. So the Israelis are just worried about, as you said, the counterattack by the Iranians, and they're worried about what would happen to their country physically. And also they would probably lose quite a few pilots on an air attack because it's something like 4,300 kilometers, and they have to refuel, which the United States would have to get involved. They don't have enough refueling tankers, I'm told. And then, of course, the Russians are on the ground manning these anti-aircraft missiles. So what I see is this. I see we're running out of time. David Albright, who is a brilliant guy, worked at CIA and was very initially critical of the Bush administration. You know, he's a former UN weapons instructor. He now runs an Institute for Science and International Security. He said that the Iranians are now enriching uranium at about 50%. The IAEA said that Iran had already produced about 200 kilograms of enriched uranium. So if you get the slide rule out and you estimate what's going to happen, even the worst, most conservative intelligence estimates say that the Iranians will have a nuclear bomb probably in 12 to 18 months. So that's what the Israelis are afraid of. And what do you do with a country that the president has said five or six times Israel should be wiped off the face of the map? I mean, the Israelis take that very seriously.
Well, I think that, and I certainly would as well if I was sitting over in Israel, but the difficulty is, of course, that what this would mean to the Iranians, what this would mean to the Israelis, what it would mean to the people here in the United States, this is what people don't understand, is that if we get into a war over there, the price of oil goes through the roof, certainly they could unleash through Venezuela all sorts of even limited nuke attacks on us. Isn't there some sort of agreement, really a military agreement between Venezuela and Iran, as well as the financial agreement as far as cutting off oil for us?
Yes, and this is where I really don't understand why our policymakers don't take more action against Venezuela. If it was President Eisenhower or John Kennedy, they'd be they'd be down in Venezuela overthrowing the government or using covert action. And so
hold that right there. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course, we are in a very, very difficult situation. When we look at what's going on, it really doesn't make sense. If it doesn't make sense, there really has to be another agenda. Well, somebody had called in and said, if Obama wins, won't he have the support of the anti-war element in the United States? And of course, it's the anti-war people who are going to be voting in large part for Obama. And there are a lot of people who want us to pull out of Iraq, want to pull us out of Afghanistan. And the last thing they want is to expand the war with over there in the Middle East with Iran, because this could have disastrous effects on the Iranian people. The Iranian people are nice people. But it's not the Iranian people who want a war, it's their government. Just as, the Japanese people are nice people. They didn't want the Second World War, but their leaders did. The German people are nice people. Most of them didn't want to get involved in a world war, but their leaders did. And unfortunately, this is sort of the situation we're in today. It really doesn't matter what the American people think or want, and it may not even matter what Obama wants. It may very well be that the war will already be underway by the time he actually gets to be the president, assuming he's elected in November. But of course, he won't actually be sworn in until, what is it, the 20th, the 21st of January?
Yes, and that's a very good point, because at first glance, a major military attack or even a limited attack against Iran would favor McCain. Okay, McCain has said the U.S. is locked in battle, American people don't want to hear it, all over the world with radical Islamic extremists. And he believes Iran is one of the biggest supporters and instigators of terrorism. And I agree with him. Obama, on the other hand, has said he will open high-level talks with Iran without any preconditions. So McCain basically use the whole thing as an attack against Iran as the lesser of two evils than letting Iran become a nuclear power and developing weapons that could give to Hezbollah. And there's a lot of politics involved in this. There's the Republican Party that's struggling against Obama's charisma. Bush's popularity is extremely, extremely low. McCain is kind of tied to that, although, I think that he's not as conservative as the Bush people like Cheney and so on and so forth. And that an Obama victory in November could prompt Mr. Bush to launch an attack against Iran. And I think that it is a myth. It's a great myth to think the United States is ever going to pull out of Iraq.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John was just saying he thinks it's a great myth of the idea that America is ever going to pull out of Iraq. We have no intention of pulling out. Of course, he feels that if Obama is elected, there's a very good chance that George Bush will launch an attack against Iran in that interim between the 4th of November, 3rd or 4th of November, and of course, the 21st of January, 20th, 21st of January, when of course, Obama would be actually is sworn in, and of course then he would be stuck with the war whether he wanted to or not. John feels that if McCain is elected, why of course then President Bush may very well hold off an attack, but it would appear that both McCain and Bush are committed to taking military action over in that area. Well, before we go on, John, would you like to get your website or anything else out before we open up our lines to callers?
Yeah, well, my email is, and I send out, periodic emails on, like I sent you one today, on
right.
Whole mesh of main actors, Russia, China, Venezuela, Iran, Israel. My email is irgglobal@aol.com. If people want to contact me, I'd be happy to put them on the list for some of our updates. One of the things that I'm working on now and some of my colleagues are working on now is kind of the schedule of what could happen. Mike McConnell, who is basically director of all intelligence in the United States, said that the other thing that is pressuring Israel to move ahead and attack Iran is to try to attack them before the Russians deploy these SA surface-to-air missiles, which could be deployed and ready, they say, by September or October. Now, there are some bright spots in this whole thing. They're not in the diplomatic area, unfortunately, but one of the things that is happening is that the Europeans have really come, especially Sarkozy, has backed the United States and President Olmert in Israel in not only blacklisting Iran's bank, it's called Bank Melli, but they've found a lot of the money that was going out of Bank Melli was actually providing a variety of vendors for Iran's nuclear and its ballistic missile programs. And the United States had placed the bank on a blacklist, I think a year or 2 years ago. But what the Europeans are doing are basically blocking any European shipments of anything, valves, parts, tubes, anything that could make a missile, anything that could make help the Iranians enrich uranium. Now, what we don't know, again, our intelligence isn't that good, is what the Russians or the Chinese are supplying Iran. Iran has always bought a lot of stuff from the Chinese. And as you know, they're buying lots of technology from the Russians. So that is where our intelligence is fairly weak, and it doesn't seem... Any pressure the United States or the Europe puts on Russia doesn't do any good. The Russians are interested in helping Iran and making money. And, of course, the Chinese benefit because they get a lot of oil from Iran. So the Chinese and the Russians are causing problems for the United States in Latin America, in Africa, certainly in Central Asia. And they don't want to see the United States succeed in the Middle East. They do not want the United States as a major power. However, the United States will never leave Iraq. I mean, maybe we'll pull out 30,000 troops here, we'll rotate 20, we'll bring out 50, but we wouldn't be building an embassy there with 2,500 staffers, and it's like a number of football fields huge, plus bases there, if we had not decided to have a base in the Middle East. And even a future President Obama is not going to be able to change that. He's just not going to be able to do it. He can reduce the size of our forces, but he will change his mind. He'll have pressure from our allies in Europe, from the Saudis, certainly from the Israelis if he's elected, and so on. And McCain, of course, is very pro-national security. He came out and stuck his neck out and said, we're going to have a base there for 1,000 years. It probably didn't help him politically, but he was right. We're never going to pull out of Iraq. So I think after the summer is over, you're going to see things happen. The United States may launch attacks against the Revolutionary Guard, who are causing a lot of mischief against our troops.
But if say what you will, that still is an act of war. I mean, we attack the Revolutionary Guard on Iranian soil. That is an act of war against Iran.
I guess it is an act of war, you know. But sure. Congress approved it in a big vote last year. I mean, even the anti-war Democrats approved it, I think 76-22, if I recall. What they approved was labeling the Revolutionary Guard is a terrorist group.
Right, right.
So if you extrapolate and you take that a next step under Bush's preemptive strike policy, which may also be illegal in an act of war, but there is a preemptive strike policy, that would give the United States the justification. No, it's actually a 76-22 Senate vote approving a resolution that declared the Revolutionary Guard a terrorist organization. So we put sanctions against them, but the United States may ratchet that up and target their garrisons in southwestern Iran, which is near the border with Iraq, which I think in a way would be a mistake. I'm not a military expert, but we know from satellite photographs, the Iranians have moved something like 90 to 280,000 fighters along the border of Iraq. So it's targeting and knocking out the IR, you know, the Revolutionary Guard's headquarters probably would be an act of war, and it would expand the war. The Iranians would launch attacks against our bases in the Middle East and possibly even in Europe.
Well, because what really concerns me, John, would be what would happen in Turkey, because there's a tremendous radical Islamic movement within Turkey, which has grown certainly tremendously ever since we attacked Afghanistan and certainly attacked Iraq. And then, of course, you have a growing radical Islamic movement within Pakistan. You have certainly a growing movement within Saudi Arabia, although they seem to be in pretty good control. But a lot of these authoritarian dictatorships that we're backing over there really are a little shaky, and really if the people ever begin to rise up, why, the whole of the political stability of that region could certainly get into trouble. Certainly this could happen in Egypt, where, as you know, Mubarak, the dictator that we put in place there, is very, very weak. He's been ill, and of course the Muslim Brotherhood has a good foothold, and there seems to be this growing radical Islamic movement through that area, and I'm fearful that if we go to war with Iran, why, it's only going to flare this up, even though that Iran is Shia Muslim and the rest are Sunni Muslims. They're all Muslims.
Well, you're absolutely right, and also mention Pakistan, because they share a border with Iran,
right,
and they could face tremendous pressure if we attack them from their Islamic parties to end all cooperation with the United States and to end cooperation with the United States in fighting Al-Qaeda and continuing the hunt for bin Laden. And you're right, Turkey, who has been our ally, we've paid them about $30 billion in the last few years. We could actually push them into the arms of the Islamics. And Europe isn't helping, because Europe does not want Turkey in the European Union. So, yeah, there's two theories on it. There could be riots and protests from mobs from all the way from Morocco to Indonesia, all the Arab world. But then there's another theory that certain Arab countries, certainly like the Saudis, the Jordanians, the Egyptians, might cheer on the removal of a nuclear Iran. I don't think those countries want to see a nuclear Iran. So I would say that I've never seen a situation where our intelligence was worse than it is today. And the analysis of intelligence is bad. It's the analysis of what the Iranians would do. You know, we work up all these scenarios in the Pentagon. We work up various scenarios in the intelligence community. We have over 20 intelligence services, but none of them seem to agree on what is going to happen, what the Iranians will do, what they could possibly do, what Israel will do, and so on. If I had to bet money today, I still believe that the United States will take military action before the Israelis do. Even though Israel carried out, you know, massive military exercises earlier this month that seemed to be a rehearsal for a potential bombing attack on Iran, I still think the United States, because I think President Bush, Cheney, and others have made unbelievable promises to the Israelis that we will do something about Iran. So I think, it's my guess that the United States will take the action, not Israel.
Well, let's get down into Central America, South America, and Venezuela. Certainly, I understand that Chavez is working with the communists there in El Salvador. There's a danger of a communist being elected president there. He's certainly working in Ecuador, Bolivia, and in a number of other countries there. And also, he is really preparing for some sort of war. Why would he be buying all of these weapons? Why would Hugo Chavez be buying 4 diesel submarines? You know, obviously they're considering attacking some warships with those. No other reason to have submarines. So, and then, of course, my understanding is that there are some at least intermediate range missiles down there. Is that true? Do you have any idea?
Well, here's what he's done. I mean, without rehashing all the stuff we already know, he's about ready to make a very important speech declaring the following. the Venezuelans are going to embark on their own nuclear weapons program, although he's going to couch it in the fact, like Iran, that it's for peaceful purposes. The Iranians, the Venezuelans, do have a reactor in outside of Caracas called the IVIC facility, I-V-I-C. There's Iranian engineers there. Everybody knows Hezbollah and Hamas and FARC have offices in Venezuela. You see, where our traditional foreign policy misinterprets Chavez, and I've lived in Venezuela, my wife's Venezuelan, I investigated him early on even before he became president. I did a very big background check on him. He's not really a Marxist or a communist, even though he's visiting Castro all the time, his hero. He's an America hater. He hates America. And all the money that he gives to left-wing countries that are now have left-wing presidents, like Morales in Bolivia and Ecuador, Nicaragua, El Salvador, he's given money to Argentina left-wing groups. We arrested several Venezuelan spies several months ago, money laundering in Miami. The U.S. attorney is prosecuting them. What our policymakers, they don't seem upset about Venezuela. They think he's either a buffoon or he's going to use oil against us. I think he's more sinister than that. I think that he wants to go down in history as the person that destroyed America. He does not care about his own people. He's wasted billions on failed social programs. He spent $5 billion alone on Russian arms. I mean, I know personally one of his arms purchasers. He's bought things that a normal country would not buy. He's purchased 300,000 AK-47s and distributed them to the poor. He's bought extra ammunition, and he continues to buy these attack helicopters with troops on them. His relations are not good with Colombia, but you know, I know people in the Colombian military, and they would clean Venezuela's clock conventionally in about 4 days. So I think his motives are more sinister. And his whole relationship with Iran is defending Iran, letting Iran come in, Al-Qaeda was training at one time. And our policymakers look upon Venezuela as somebody that's just going to reduce oil or cut our oil off. And they believe the intelligence, you know, we do have intelligence that the Venezuelans are signing long-term agreements with the Chinese, which are crazy. They're guaranteeing the Chinese oil prices a year or two from now at prices today. The Chinese also take a very long time to pay their bills. But the United States, we buy oil from Venezuela. We get about 15%. I think it's 14.6% now. And we pay on the money. So he's kind of cutting his nose off despite his face. He's kicking the United States out to give the Chinese Venezuelan oil. And he's taking more and more of that money to rally against the United States. And I think he's up to no good, especially there's lots of rumors that he's trying to obtain some kind of nuclear weapons.
Well, now, is there any possibility that the people over there will either vote him out or will there'll be a coup and get rid of him?
Well, they have a very weak opposition, but they did win the last referendum. They put him down. Now, 3 weeks ago, he tried to redo all his intelligence services, and he passed some kind of bill that a neighbor must spy on a neighbor, and if they don't spy on the neighbor, they'll be arrested by the police. Well, he backed off of that, and this is a typical communist thing, you know. I mean, it's something he learned from Cuba. Cuba runs their political campaigns. They run his military and intelligence services. But the Cubans have been a modifying force there because they're getting so much money from him and something like 80,000 barrels a day. Plus, they're building a big refinery in Cuba. Castro's never had it so good. He's riding the gravy train. You know, us dumb Americans are buying the oil, paying him a lot of money, and he's using all that oil money to give to Castro and these left-wing groups all over the world. So there is an opposition, but it's completely penetrated by Cuban intelligence. Now, there's a big election, another referendum coming up in November, which would definitely limit how many years he could run. However, Chavez has said he's going to ignore that. He's going to stay in power for a lifetime. And he's a dictator, and he can probably do it. He can probably use the military and the police. I mean, it's becoming more and more of a police state. So it's going to be very difficult to get rid of him.
Well, it certainly doesn't look like a very good situation down there, either for the Venezuelan people or... But most Americans really don't understand that this is really a foreign base here in the Western Hemisphere. The Monroe Doctrine is dead. And of course, with intermediate-range missiles, which are readily available, I'm sure, on the international markets, why he would be able to launch attacks, certainly on the southern part of the United States, wouldn't he, John?
Yes, he's you know, there are rumors with this missile defense plan that he's put in. It's really a Trojan horse for the possible use of basing missiles there.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, we didn't put up with that. Kennedy put in a blockade, and we almost went to nuclear war with just the concept of missiles coming into Cuba.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program. And you were just saying that certainly under the Kennedy assassination, that certainly there was a threat of nuclear missiles in Cuba, why we almost went to nuclear war. In other words, we weren't going to put up with that. And yet now, of course, when Chavez, who's a good friend of Castro's, is down there and certainly has the potential for getting nuclear intermediate-range missiles that could attack America, nobody seems to even be in the least bit concerned. That's really bothersome.
Well, what it is, I think we've become so democratic in our country here in America, common sense has turned on its head. I mean, the CIA, even if they had the ability, the Congress would never give them permission to run covert actions there. We're trying to collect intelligence, and the Venezuelan and Cuban intelligence services are all over our operatives there, and they know everything we're doing. The Cubans have very good counterintelligence, and even if a covert action was approved to overthrow his government, which it couldn't be because Chavez was elected democratically, whether we like it or not, there was a little fraud, but not a lot of fraud. He was elected democratically, so Congress immediately says, we can't do anything to overthrow him. And I know for a fact there's been very limited covert actions to fund either the opposition political parties or do anything to destabilize his government. It's a completely hands-off policy in Venezuela, and I think it's a big mistake. The only ray of hope is if the Colombians do something, because they're getting fed up with Venezuelan support of FARC. They have a lot of evidence. A good friend of mine was the chief negotiator in Colombia with FARC and the former ambassador in Europe. And he says they have irrefutable evidence from computers that they got and sources and defectors that Chavez is continuing to give money, something like $300 million to FARC, gives them passports, gives them refuge, and they're a terrorist organization.
And this is a Colombian terrorist organization, right?
Yes, FARC started out as a Marxist group, guerrilla group, and now it's mainly a business, it's drugs. And the Colombians have made tremendous progress against them with the United States' help. It's called Plan Colombia. We've given them a couple $1 billion, but Congress has cut most of that money off now. The Democratic Congress does not like Uribe, and Uribe is, I think, doing a great job in Colombia. So the Colombians, ironically, are also buying like kinds of military equipment from the Russians.
Hey, we're out of time. John, we could go on for hours. We're out of time. God bless. I'll talk to you off the air. Thanks so much for being with us.
All the best. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and of course, if you'd be interested in getting the tape of the CD of these programs, and John does talk during the breaks, why, there's so much other information that's there, and certainly apparently the Colombians are buying a lot of military equipment from the Russians, just exactly as Venezuela is. But if you look things perfectly logically, they don't make sense. And those of you, of course, have seen my DVD of the World Revolution, which actually contains an interview I did back in 1980 with Ambassador Smith, the American ambassador to Cuba, where he will tell you that that the American State Department and the American CIA brought Fidel Castro to Cuba into power, knowing full well he was a communist. Now, that's not what you've been told. And it goes into the background, because we talk about the Bay of Pigs. The Bay of Pigs was never launched to overthrow Fidel Castro. It was launched to have an impact on the minds of the American people and make us think that we were going to attack Fidel Castro. To understand what's really going on, of course, we quote from David Rockefeller's memoirs, page 405, which you can get from Radio Liberty, where David Rockefeller readily admits that he has no loyalty to America. He is dedicated to a new international order. He's part of a secret cabal, and of course that he's proud of what he's done. Page 405, I paraphrase the statement, but you'll actually hear it quoted on my book, in my talk on the World Revolution. The World Revolution continues as we bring in country after country communist dictators to power, and you say, that's crazy talk. Well, recently, of course, in Nepal, one of the last monarchies, why we backed the Maoists or communists, against, of course, the central government. We cut off their ability to buy weapons anywhere in the world, and, of course, they were forced then to turn the government over to the Maoists, and the Maoists are in working control in Nepal. Why Nepal? Well, because so many of the other countries in the world, we have actually brought dictators to power. I mean, you don't really believe that they have free elections in Egypt, do you, which we back, or free elections in Saudi Arabia, which we back, or any of the Arab states, or Kuwait among them, and certainly they may have free elections of a sort in Turkey, but it really doesn't matter what the people want. The military decides what's going to happen. We're backing dictators all throughout the world at communist Russia. And Russia is still a communist country. The head of the government, Putin, recently turned power over, but Putin came from the KGB. He led the counterpart of the KGB. They call it the FSB now. And so they were backing the communist government and communist China. In fact, after the Tiananmen Square massacre, why we punished communist China by giving them most favored nation trade status. Actually, we rewarded them. We can't let the American people understand the real purpose of American foreign policy, because it's so incredible, but it's well laid out, of course, in my talk on the World Revolution, which is available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We hope you want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. We quote Bella Dodd there, former high official in the Communist Party of the United States, and her total disillusionment when she found that when she had asked who she should contact during the Second World War if they lost contact with Moscow, she was told to go to the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City and contact some of the leading capitalists in this country, and they would give her the current official party line. And Bella Dodd eventually broke with communism, realizing it was as phony as the $3 bill. You need to get my pamphlet, The Communist Capitalist Alliance. The Communist Capitalist Alliance. You need to get my interview with Professor Sutton, The Best Enemies Money We Can Buy, going into how we financed Russia from the time of the Russian Revolution, how we financed the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War. Just as we're financing the Pakistanis today, we're financing the Pakistani military that's financing the Taliban that's killing our boys in Afghanistan. It's like deja vu all over again. If you want to prove me wrong, get the material, analyze it, get the documentation. Listen to my interview with Ambassador Earl T. Smith. He was a very gracious billionaire. He's one of the few billionaires I've ever had an opportunity to meet. My telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. And then pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, of course, this hour we hope we can have Melody Cedarstrom with us, gold and silver discounting. But if not, why, you can give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, because we were going to talk this evening about what's happening economically. Now, if you read the Wall Street Journal, as I do regularly, and then go up on the Internet and pull down information on what's happening to our economy, you'll find that things are not looking very good. General Motors stock is at the lowest it's ever been. And in fact, they're very well may be moving into a position number two here in America. Number one production being Toyota. It's pretty close right now, but it looks like the way things are going. But General Motors is losing money on almost every car and SUV that they produce, that they're very soon going to be in more and more problems. But people really don't understand the implications of what's happening to the American auto industry. As one of the last major production manufacturing facilities in the United States is simply being effectively destroyed. And it's not happening by accident. It is happening by intent. There's been an organized effort to allow the Japanese to build better cars in the United States. And you say, how could that be? Well, of course, you need to hear our talk. It's called The New Order of the Barbarians. It's interviews that were done in the early 1990s with a Dr. Dunnigan, who was actually a pediatrician up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, who had heard in 1969 the whole incredible plan laid out by an insider, and very, very seldom do they come forward and live very long. And the insider's name was Dr. Richard Day. He was the former medical director of Planned Parenthood. And sure enough, after revealing what was going to happen in the future, he didn't live too long after that. But this talk, of course, these are interviews with Dr. Dunnigan. One of them I did. A couple of them were done by somebody else, Randy Engel. But you'll find it's a fascinating overview of what's happening, their population control agenda, the fact that they were actually planning on concealing treatments for cancer. So, because after all, people had to die of something. They might as well die of cancer. There are too many people in the world. They were going to legalize abortion. And one of the things that really got to me was not only they were going to create new diseases, but they were going to have the Japanese and foreign cars built better than the American cars. This was 1969. Sounded pretty ridiculous in 1969. But I'll tell you right now, I'd rather have a Toyota any day than a General Motors car or a Ford car. And this did not happen by accident. It happened by intent. And now, as we see General Motors beginning to sink gracefully into the western sunset, as, of course, their profits are down, they're losing money on every car. The only reason they make any money at all is because they're the largest automotive producer in communist China. Imagine that. And then, of course, the housing market's going from bad to worse. But let's go to our special guest this evening. Always a pleasure to have Melody Cedarstrom with us. Hi, Melody. How are you doing?
Just fine, Dr. Stan. How about yourself?
Well as can be expected. Tell me, how are things as far as your business is concerned?
Well, interest is beginning to kick up again. And as we saw gold pull back a little bit for the past couple months, kind of consolidate around that 880 level, it's beginning to bring new buyers into the market, so that's a good sign.
Okay, fine. Well, we certainly have noticed what's going on, and of course, it's obvious that this is being totally manipulated. And if you read the figures up on Kitco every day, for instance, I watch silver very closely, and you know, there's no consistency at all. Silver is really up. I don't know what was it up 20 or 30 cents today. What happened to silver?
Well, actually, it was up, it ended up about 9 cents today.
Okay. Well, of course, it goes up, goes down, but it's all manipulated by massive short selling. We'll be right back. All right, Melody, because, I mean, I think it's so difficult for people to understand that you really can, if you have the permission of the government, manipulate the markets. So we see this, it's going on as far as the oil markets are concerned, and they're allowing them to manipulate them. We're seeing massive short selling in both the gold and silver markets, which is illegal, but who are you going to report it to when the government's intent upon controlling these prices? So, of course, the prices will not go up and alarm the public. So is there any way, at least your listeners have a pretty good idea, or at least the people who you deal with have a pretty good idea of what's happening, don't they?
Yes, they do. And you're right, the markets are so manipulated by the powers, but their manipulation powers are just about gone. And we can see how they manipulate the price of gold. They sell massive amounts into the market, and along with their ability to control the U.S. dollar. But the times that they're able to do it are becoming shorter and shorter, and their ability to manipulate are having less impacts on the prices of gold, and they're having a very difficult time keeping the dollar anywhere near the 74 level. It just can't stay there. So you can see their ability slowly erode. And you also notice at certain times, like usually at each month when options expire, or sometimes at the end of each quarter, and usually at each quarter, which we are at now, you can see the major manipulation, like during the major G7 meetings or any other governmental global get-together that they have. You'll see, you know, more manipulation during or prior to a Fed meeting, or if you have anyone that is speaking, whether it be Greenspan, Bernanke, the president, or anyone of importance, when they talk about the economy, you know, they will always put pressure on gold because they can't tout that the inflation is low or show how their strong dollar beliefs or a good economy is there when gold is rising, and you know, really kind of making them look like a fool, because you know, gold always has questions and gold always needs answers. And it is that simple and that obvious, and you can see the signs so easy anymore. And again, they're having more and more difficulties in trying to keep the manipulation over a longer period of time.
Well, you know, I think it's so interesting when somebody sells 5 tons of gold or 500 tons of gold. I mean, nobody ever asks, who's buying that gold? I mean, certainly it's not the fellow down in the corner who's buying the 50 tons of gold. Somebody with an awful lot of money is accumulating gold, and I think it's, of course, they're planning on a new currency, a new gold-backed currency, privately issued but stable. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Melody was just talking about the manipulation in the gold and silver markets, and you must understand this is the reality. And of course, they are really selling, you know, hundreds of thousands of silver contracts for silver that they don't have. That's called a naked short. It's illegal. But then when the government's involved in illegal activities, how can you possibly complain? But what is really so interesting is we see the central banks around the world selling 5 tons or 50 tons or 500 tons of gold. But nobody, have you ever noticed, nobody ever asks, who's buying that gold? Certainly it's not the shoe repairman around the corner. And, of course, the average multimillionaire would have trouble buying a 50 tons of gold. And how would you store it? What would you do with it? And I'd like to suggest, after reading what it says in the official publications of the Council on Foreign Relations and the speeches made by some of their fellows there back at the Council on Foreign Relations, which is really, for all intents and purposes, a reflection of the invisible government of the United States, that what is really planned is the destruction of the dollar, and then, of course, creating a new international global currency, backed by gold and privately issued, so it wouldn't be answerable to any government, but there'd be gold behind the currency, and people would realize that they could not then destroy the value of that currency, as they've so effectively done here in the United States, where the dollar, you know, that existed in back in 1913 should be worth a dollar today. It's a but they've destroyed about 96% of that dollar, so that today, you know, that dollar would be worth about 4 cents, you know, that they What they've effectively done is to destroy the value of our currency, and they're in the process of doing that today. And believe me, when the dollar loses its reserve status, why the whole house of cards is going to begin crumbling down. Would you agree, Melody?
Absolutely. You have to, all the currencies around the world, they're all fiat, just like our currency. Most of your foreign nations, you know, you look at India and China, and you know, you can go into Vietnam, you can go into South Africa, and their rates of inflation that they admit to are certainly a lot higher than ours, but, of course, what we admit to, and, of course, again, those are just flat-out lies in which they tell us is our inflation. But I agree with you also. I do believe there will be a unit of trade when you have the global interconnection that we have, and you have all these various currencies that are trading at various levels. You need something in order to stabilize these currencies for trade. And so gold is the only way in which they could bring stabilization. And whether it be a basket of currencies with gold in there is probably how they'll do it. Or they might just create a unit of trade in which it will be gold. And so, I mean, I also agree with that. And I don't think we're that far away from having that being completed.
Here's what really worries me is what's going to happen to the American people who are, you know, everything is denominated in dollars, and their insurance policies, their pension funds, their savings, their CDs, their annuities. I mean, so much of what people have is denominated in dollars. You destroy the dollar, you destroy everything that people own and hold and have worked their whole life for.
Well, true, and another way of looking at it is if these companies go bankrupt, if these pension plans go bankrupt and they no longer have to be paid, they don't have to worry about valuing the plans and these insurance premiums and payments and so forth, because they won't be there, to which they would have to add any valuation to them. So, you know, it's going to be a combination, and everything will happen basically at the same time, or, you know, within steps of, or closely
together. And somebody just asked, what would happen? Would we just start all over again as the Germans did after the inflation there in the late 20s, leading up to the takeover of Germany by Adolf Hitler? And I'd say absolutely. Once you do destroy the currency, as they have in Rhodesia, the man we installed there, Mugabe, has destroyed the value of the currency. It's happened time and again in South America. It certainly happened in Weimar Germany. And, of course, people are wiped out, impoverished, and then they start in all over again. It's sort of like a marble game. And somebody has all the marbles. You got to redistribute the marbles before you can get the game going again. And, of course, the game of mercantilism, of buying and selling, and it requires some sort of a stable means of exchange. So I think it's only a matter of time, whether we're talking about a year, 2 years, 5 years, I don't know. But I'll tell you, it's not too far away as we see what's happening. And the whole economy here is getting in more and more trouble. The unemployment rate is rising. People are not buying as they have in the past. I just talked to a gentleman, Giles Firewood, and he was telling me how terrible the business is because, of course, you know, people weren't buying firewood last winter. They're not buying firewood this year because they just don't have money. There are an awful lot of people there who are really beginning to feel the economic pinch as a direct result of what's going on today. They've lost the value of their homes here in Santa Cruz. Probably the homes have lost about $150,000, the average home, down about $150,000 in value. So up until probably a few months ago, why we weren't seeing the drop-off in value here, but we are beginning to see it even in Santa Cruz, which has been very, very stable. Well, certainly, of course, more and more foreclosures out across the country. Congress is trying to get things, the housing market working again. They want Fannie Mae to go ahead and begin making large loans. They call them jumbo loans. Anything, I think, over $440,000 is a jumbo loan. And they want them to make loans with as little as 3% down. Well, of course, if you only have 3% down, why, of course, you don't have much of an attachment to your home, especially when the value continues falling. But what's even more than that is that right now, a lot of the banks or even the individual who's trying to sell their house will lend the buyer the 3% so they can put that down on their house so that it will sell. And then the individual still has no investment in the house. And how easy it will be down the line for them simply to turn in the keys and walk away. And so everything the government is doing in the way of trying to solve the problem is only making the housing problem worse. People should not be able to buy a house unless they can put down at least a 10, probably, preferably 15% a down payment. So if the value of the house goes down, they're not going to immediately just give it up. And I think we're a long way from the bottom of the housing market. What do you think, Melody?
Well, I agree. I mean, we have several years before we see the bottom of this housing market, and my area is like yours. It took a while for it to be hit, but you're beginning to see house prices being reduced, and you're seeing more and more houses come on the market. For a long time in my area, there weren't any homes at all, and now all of a sudden, 5, 6, 7, 8 homes are popping up on the market. They're not being sold. People need a certain price in order to get out of them. And, of course, it's a buyer's market, so they're coming in offering lower prices, and people are not letting their homes go. So, you know, you have that game going on, which, you know, just freezes everything. And then you also have the people who really don't want to sell, but they begin to panic knowing what is going on in the housing market. So they put their homes up for sale, and, again, we have a glut. I read an article just a little bit ago where also when this housing market, again, we have so many foreigners come into this country and buying up our real estate now. And the article was about Texas, how there's a developer out of Mexico who wants Texas back. So he is taking advantage of all the, he believes, the article basically said, you know, hey, we used to own Texas. It used to be ours. Now that these homes are coming up for foreclosure, we can go in there and we can buy up some prime properties. And so you're going to be seeing, you know, more and more of our lands being bought by foreigners. I mean, of course, we've already seen our infrastructure being bought by several foreign entities, you know, turnpikes, bridges, and roads. And it's America is being sold up. Each block, each city, state, and it's, you know what, Dr. Stan, I just can't see a turnaround.
I don't see it either, and of course we find that the Royal Bank of Scotland, within this last week, has said that we're heading into a major economic crisis unparalleled in our lifetimes. And so even Alan Greenspan is beginning to say that we're on the verge of a serious recession. I think Alan Greenspan's just a little bit behind. We've been in a recession for a good long while, but of course he hasn't wanted to admit that because he's primarily responsible. He's the architect of exactly what has happened, and he created this, and the question is why. We try to answer that in a little pamphlet we have called The Financial Meltdown, but I don't have all the answers. Only Alan Greenspan knows why he manipulated the markets to create the problem, why he encouraged people to buy homes with adjustable rate mortgages, why he encouraged the creative financing that got a lot of people into homes they were never going to be able to pay for. And, of course, they are victims. Everybody's a victim. Of course, the real estate people were making a lot of money. The mortgage people were making a lot of money. The people who bundled the mortgage loans and turned them into banks made a lot of money. And, of course, the appraisers made a lot of money. There was tremendous fortunes were made when the housing bubble was building. But, unfortunately, the housing bubble has now burst. And of course, an awful lot of people have been seriously hurt. Actually, tent cities are springing up across America. I know there's one down in Orange County where people have lost their homes, are going and just setting up a tent just to have shelter. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you have a question for Melody about what's going on financially. Because, of course, it is my contention that the people who are engineering this whole thing intend to wipe out the middle class and impoverish our people as a stepping stone to the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. We're going to be back here in just a moment. We'll welcome your calls, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295, right here in the Central Coast of California. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, back at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, Melody Cederstrom, who sells gold and silver. And of course, I'm interested to know that more people apparently are coming in. Are they new customers, Melody, or are these old customers coming back just to want to increase their position?
Well, we always have a great repeat clientele where they're continuing to add to their portfolio because they realize there really isn't anything else. Gold and silver is pretty much the safest. It carries the least amount of risk. They prefer to sit on the sidelines and to preserve what they have until the system purges and perhaps there's possible other investments further on down the road. So they're continuing to add the cash that they received and put it into gold and silver. I'm beginning to hear comments again pop up. Well, I've been listening to your program and I've been at your website for the past 6, 7, 8 months, and, I've decided that, I can't wait any longer, that I need to get into it. And a lot of people, historically, we usually have a soft gold and silver market going into the summer, so a lot of people always wait to see what happens and to see if they can catch a bargain or two in coins. This year, I think we've pretty much seen the bottom of 880 in gold, and that doesn't seem to be the case. And usually the gold prices will pick up again in July and August. So we've seen that the past several years, and I think we'll see it again this year. And I believe gold is being really coiled tightly around this 880, and I think once it breaks 910, I think it's just going to zoom. And there's lots of predictions out there that we'll see 1,200 by the end of the year, and I think we will also.
Well, it's very interesting. We hear some people, and of course, we've only heard a few of the really gold fanatics made these remarks, but other people are talking, even responsible people, about the possibility of gold going to $5,000 an ounce. Have you heard that?
Yes, I have. There's the mainstream is becoming more and more vocal as far as the prices of gold because they see what's really going on in the economy. It's not just about high gasoline prices. It comes back to a currency crisis. Our currency is being devalued, and it all stems from that. It's a systemic problem, and it's just not hitting various points across the country. And I mean, it's a global situation, and when we add everything together, it's just snowballing, and the dominoes have begun to tip, and they're gathering speed, and, you can see with poor monetary policy taking us off the gold standard, that's where it all started. And, of course, these are all symptoms of that, and which all equal out to the collapse.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I really think that we are in for one of the most difficult times of my lifetime. As you know, I'm 79 and going on 80 years old, and I've seen a lot of things happening, but nothing like this. And because it's been prophesied for a long period of time by hard money advocates that the whole fiat money system, the fraudulent money system, is going to collapse. Congressman Ron Paul has been talking about this, and that sooner or later, it was going to happen. And even Paul Volcker, in that speech he gave back in 2005, said that sooner or later, he didn't know whether it was with a crash or a whimper, but this whole thing was going to come tumbling down. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Melody Cederstrom. And, of course, somebody had called in and wanted to ask if you'd heard anything about these companies that offer to renegotiate credit card rates and debts. And they can say they can get between a 40% and a 60% decrease in the amount of money that you owe. Do you know anything at all about that program?
Well, there's always been companies out there who, will try to renegotiate your interest rates and, pay, a smaller amount than what you owe, but you also, I believe, there's a lot of companies that probably aren't very safe or regulated to work with. You do have to be careful. I've heard there's a lot of scams in those areas because, of course, people, anytime people are looking and are desperate, they will try anything. So you do have to be careful. Please make sure that they're reputable. I don't believe, I think a lot of them will kind of lead you to believe that your credit ratings will be saved and so forth, but I don't think that's the case. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think that's the case. So, you know, just be careful out there, you know, who you do business with and what they're promising you, because if it sounds too good to be true, you know, it probably is. But,
that's a good way to look at it. I should comment that we do advertise, that we do carry an advertisement for an organization. I've checked it out as best I can, and they don't hold any of the money. They're one of these groups that actually does renegotiate your credit card debt with a credit card company, and if you're not going to be able to pay it, why, of course, you want to get those people, the credit company, the calls from these people just harassing you, especially now when they're coming in from India. But, of course, they can apparently they deal with this full-time. They're called getoutofdebt.com, I think it is. You can listen to our advertisements. I've checked them out, and the company that actually holds the money, as far as I could tell, they're legitimate. They came with the highest recommendations from our good friend David Wagner, who I've known for some time and who I trust implicitly, and he trusts them. A man in charge as a minister is no longer practicing in the ministry. Now, that doesn't mean anything. Any of these things could be a scam. But as I've done the best I could to check them out, or I would not carry their advertisements.
Well, I think that's wonderful, because people do need to know they can trust somebody when they are trying to work through the problems that they have. So I think it's wonderful that you've been able to find somebody for them.
Well, I all I can say is I've done the best I can, and everything I've found about them seems to be legitimate, and I've talked to the companies that they work with, and they have a good recommendation. So anyway,
that's great.
I hope
I'll
that
have keep that in mind if someone asks me. Thank you.
Okay, it's called getoutofdebt.com, and we can call us, and we'd give you the telephone number. But a lot of people are hurting. Of course, this is one of the big problems, is that there's this tremendous credit card debt, and a lot of people, especially when you end up making a late payment, you're paying 25-29% interest rate. They just can never get out of debt. And that's why you need some help with somebody who can negotiate this for you. And this thing was all planned ahead of time. I mean, they've repealed the usury laws, which they never should have. But we should have never had this ability to live on credit and credit cards and borrow money to do this and the other thing. In Muslim countries, they don't do this. They do not allow the charging of interest on money. And this gets you into real problems. Up until the 1600s, the Catholic Church and the Protestant Church were totally against borrowed money. If you wanted to get something, you had to have the money for it. Well, of course, it's wonderful, though, if you can buy things and buy now and play now and pay later. But what happens if you can't pay later? And we don't have debtors' prisons, but the way this thing has been set up with the repeal of the bankruptcy laws, this is the second best thing to a debtors' prison. You're in a situation where you will never get out of debt if you don't do something and do it dramatically. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But certainly we're having tremendous problems as far as the credit card payments are concerned, and that credit card bubble is going to be bursting one of these times, because more and more people, well, after all, I mean, you got to pay more money for fuel, you got to pay more money for food, and if you've got a choice between paying for fuel or paying for food or paying off your credit cards, what do you think people are going to do? Well, they're not going to pay off the credit cards, of course. And down the line, I think this whole credit card bubble is going to begin to implode. And then the derivative market is beginning to tremble. And, of course, dramatic increase in the amount of derivatives out there. And, of course, the entire value of the United States is about $45 trillion. Everything everybody owes and everything you own, everybody lumped together is $45 trillion. The derivative liability is close to $700 trillion today. A lot of that is held here in the United States by J.P. Morgan Chase and by Goldman Sachs and a few of these other large corporations, and that derivative bubble bursts. Hang on to your hat. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Right, Melody, go right ahead there. We got that's not our theme song, but that'll have to do for the time being. Anyway, go right ahead.
Dr. Stan.
Anyway, of course, as we see these various bubbles, and we've already seen the stock market bubble burst, we've seen, of course, the housing bubble burst. I think we're on the verge of seeing the credit bubble burst, the credit card bubble. But the last bubble is going to be the derivative bubble, and that is what's really going to take the whole financial house of cards down, because there isn't that much money. There's not $700 trillion in the whole world today.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, I believe it was 50 years ago. It's amazing how that continues to grow at the speed that it's growing. I believe there was reporting of $400 trillion in these derivatives worldwide.
That's right, and they've just grown so dramatically.
Yes, and this is after everyone knows, you know, the problem with them. And so it's amazing that it is growing at the speed still that it is, that area is growing. So it's very disturbing, but again, part of that I do believe is how they are keeping everything afloat. And I mean, people just can't even relate to billions, and here we are, trillions. And so we'll be soon have to step over the next after trillions. But and I think that's how they're able to keep this going for as long as they have, because people just can't relate and understand to the numbers and to the degree. And they won't know until it all comes tumbling down and unfolding.
Basically, what they do is they talk about, it's really about three-fourths of a quadrillion, about three-fourths of a quadrillion. I mean, I can't even imagine a billion, much less a trillion.
Well, you can imagine a million, though. I know. It's and the numbers are, you know, it is, you know, they don't mean anything anymore. You know, they're just words, they're just numbers, and they really don't mean anything. And but they will. So they've been able to pull that through. So that's how the normal or the general populace out there just doesn't understand. But again, the signs that we're seeing, you know, and again, not only the credit card debts, and it takes, you know, $80, $90, $100 to fill your vehicle with gasoline. When I was coming back from my trip, I stopped to refill, and they were out of two gas stations side by side, and they were out of the lower octane gasoline. The only thing they had left, or so they said, was the higher octane. So that was a little disturbing, because one of these gasoline areas was a large truck stop.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Melody Cederstrom. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Melody Cederstrom. Melody, before we go on with the program, I want you to go ahead and get out your webpage. I want you to get out your telephone number so people would know how to get in touch with you. And remember, Melody does support Radio Liberty, but we support her because we know she does a great job, and we've had so many reports from her happy customers to tell us how much they enjoy working with her. Our telephone number, again, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But right now, Melody, let's get your telephone number, your web page out there.
Our telephone number is 1-800-375-4188, and again, that is 800-375-4188. Our website, and I still haven't shortened it yet, is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. That is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And if anybody would like to email us here regarding your gold and silver coins or portfolio, you can email us at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. And you do need to spell out the A-N-D.
Well, you know, of course, really it's fascinating as you see what's transpiring. in our local county, in our local city, Santa Cruz, why they don't have enough money to pay the salaries. They're having to cut positions. I think the county is going to have to, you know, cut a lot of positions. The school boards are going to have to cut a lot of positions. And it's not just in our community. It's all over the state. And then, of course, the state is something like $19, $20 billion behind. I should say billion dollars behind, you know. Massive deficits there. And really, of course, the only thing they can cut, nobody wants to cut. Nobody wants to raise taxes. And as the value of houses actually declines, then the amount of income coming into the state declines. So what do? They raise the taxes, and then people move out of the state. They make less money than they did before. It's sort of a lose-lose proposition, but this is happening all over the country. And of course, whether it's the local city or the county or the state government, many of them, of course, have heavy bonded indebtedness. And what happens if they have a choice between laying off more people or paying on their bonds? And of course, initially they'll pay on their bonds, but eventually you get to a point you can't pay on your bonds. And then what happens? And then, of course, the whole bond market begins to implode. And the bond market is the basis of our whole economic system, because our economic system is totally based upon debt. And until people understand that, they can't understand why we're in the mess we are today. And, of course, the best explanation of how that works is Ed Griffin's wonderful book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And it's not necessarily the amount of money in circulation. It's the credit they create as they expand the debt market, the bond market, the commercial paper market. But all of these things are really on the verge of beginning to implode. So again, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. If you have a question for Melody, if you have a question about the things that are going on, as we begin to see the demise of the American financial system, the demise of what's going on throughout the world. The Chinese stock market is down almost 50%. Now people, they're so smart, they invest in Chinese stocks, and what do you know? They're falling like a rock. And then, of course, the inflation rate in China is quite high. The inflation rate in India, the inflation rate over in the Saudi Arabian area, they're talking 10 to 12%, Saudi Arabia and those various Arab countries along the Persian Gulf. And these people are really getting worried because, of course, inflation leads to social unrest. And now we see the price of food going through the sky. We find out that within the last week, the price of iron ore has gone up 85%. 85% for the Rio Tinto now has raised the price of iron 85%, which will be reflected then in the price of steel and everything that's steel dependent. That's going to drive up massively the price of new cars down the line. And of course, they're having trouble selling them now. So we're really in the ravages of inflation. We see the price of corn going up. We find that with the crop failures we're going to have because of the flooding, why our staple crops, certainly soybeans and corn, are even going to go higher. All of this is going to be reflected, I believe, down the line in social unrest. What do you think, Melody?
I agree. I have many farmers that are customers, and they tell me how the devastation in the Midwest, our main crops, you know, the corn and the soybeans, I mean, they've just been devastated. And, you know, I've been told that they're just not reporting the degree of devastation that they've had. So you're right, you're going to see higher and higher corn prices, soybean prices. And again, that all comes down to, you're correct, social unrest, because, you know, food will not be on the shelves. You know, there will be a distribution problem because the diesel, they can't distribute it in a costly manner, and this all filters through, and it seems like, you know, we get to this point, and these are all symptoms of our economic policies from the very beginning, and this is the final result, and it affects each and every area, and then you have these unforeseen weather situations that come at these times, as it always seems when it rains it pours. So again, it's and gold and silver, truly, when you match them to your other commodities like your iron and your food base, they are still way underpriced compared to the other commodities. So they will catch up, and they are truly the bargain.
I agree with you, and I think basically what we're talking about, we're going to lose at least 15 to 20% of our corn crop. Then we're taking another 25% of it and putting it into ethanol, so we're only going to have half the corn that we've had in the past. And, of course, now corn's up to about $8 a bushel, somewhere in there. Maybe somebody out in the farming community could call in and correct me. But this is then raising the price of growing chickens, and the price of chickens and eggs going up. The price of meat is going up. Of course, dairy cattle, in fact, they're slaughtering the dairy cattle, and they're slaughtering the regular cattle because it's so expensive to feed them. So temporarily the price of meat will go down as they begin to thin out the herds. And they're doing the same thing with the hogs as well. In other words, they're slaughtering the hog herds. But then what happens when there's a shortage of hogs and meat? And, of course, you see the price go up even further. And so this whole situation begins to feed on itself. Do you have that feeling, Melody?
Yes, it does. And so, folks, I mean, if you have an opportunity to begin putting food behind, it's so important. And you know, I believe we had a caller here once who says that, you know, they, with their children, that they don't have the additional funds to go out and buy the expensive dry food and the freeze dry and things like that. But, you know, if you can always pick up, you know, extra, your oats and your wheats, I always buy some extra oatmeal and try to buy some rice, pick up some rice and store it away and make sure it's stored properly. So you don't get the bugs in it and so forth if you live in a more human community. And so there are things that you can do, and it is so important. You know, and water also will be a very important thing in order to have some sort of filter so you can filter your water. So these are things that you can do, and people shouldn't procrastinate. And those that, I don't know, they're supposed to pass that, I guess the Supreme Court's supposed to come down tomorrow, an issue that on the Washington ban on handguns. I'm not truly familiar with the whole ban that they're trying to get passed, but we were going to see a tightening in that area also, particularly if the Democrats get in come this fall. There'll be more pressure on, again, putting in the additional bans and so forth. So you do need to, you know, do that area also.
All right, so I think that probably, you know, we're probably maybe about 2 years from the bottom of the market. Nobody really knows how far it's going to go, but anybody wants to tell you that we're just about at the bottom of the stock market, just about at the bottom of the recession, is just not telling you the truth. In fact, I think that we're going to see not simply a recession, I think we're going to see a major depression that will rival or perhaps even exceed that of the period of 1929, 1939, where the Federal Reserve System intentionally created a crisis. Why? Because it justified pulling in the gold so they could eventually take us onto a fiat money system, because I believe everything is following some side of a timetable. I believe it's a spiritual timetable, and as I think, as we see the things deteriorating in the Near East and the Middle East, and then the economic problems here, and of course here in California, it's really so interesting. As of yesterday, there were at least 700 fires burning here in California. And, of course, at least 100 of those fires, they're not even trying to stop them. They don't have the personnel. They don't have the equipment to start them. So they're trying to get the fires primarily with their houses. But even some of those, they do not have adequate personnel. And the people have been fighting and working so hard for such a long period of time that many of the firefighters here in California are simply exhausted. And somebody just corrected me, say there's now over 1,000 fires today. That's the latest report. I'm a day late. There were 700 fires yesterday, 1,000 fires today. And you know, Melody, as I look at this, and I remember, of course, that it was just a few weeks ago when the Supreme Court decided that gays could marry, and of course now they've started marrying here in California, and people don't like to associate anything of, you know, the climatic catastrophe that really is hitting California. Of course, we used to joke that God's going to bring an earthquake. Maybe he's going to bring fires. I have lived in this state for 79 years. I was born here, raised here almost all of my life, and I've never seen fires like we're having now. I've talked to a couple of arborists in the last couple of days. Nobody in California has ever seen a season such as we've started with and will be going for the next several months. So gay marriages began last week on Monday night at 5 p.m. Do you think God possibly could be giving us a message? Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And a lot of people sort of laugh at the idea that there's any relationship between catastrophes or certainly natural occurrences and God. But I don't think so. I believe that he's in charge. And I think that sometimes he does anything that they can to get our attention. I would hope that what's happening in California is going to get the attention of a lot of people. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. And Melody, how are we doing as far as silver? Is silver pretty accessible now, or is there still some difficulty getting the silver eagles and other coins?
No, there's no problem in getting silver eagles. Sometimes the 10-ounce bars are a little difficult to get because they don't make them anymore. And so, sometimes they can be a little hard to get on the secondary market, but silver eagles, 90% silver bags, Morgan silver dollars, piece silver dollars, you can, usually find them, and again, it's a very thin market, just like the gold market, and of course, it can change tomorrow. If you have the stock market drop 1,000 points in a day or 2 days, I'll guarantee you that a lot of product will be gone. So just like we saw a year ago when we had the 1,000-point drop in gold, that's pretty much when everything started with the Bear Stearns announcements last June, and the markets began to take the hit in August. We just had the Dow drop 1,000 points in a week, and coin prices jumped considerably. Spot gold jumped, and product went very fast off the shelf. So I expect it to happen again. And that's another thing people have to realize. It's important not to put off. If you're looking to get in the gold market, you shouldn't wait for it to get to a certain level in order to buy. You can always do a little bit of cost averaging if you want, if you think you're going to save a couple dollars. But in the meantime, trying to save those couple dollars could cost you a lot more. So if you're looking to get in the market, take the plunge, get in. We always take a simple and a basic approach to buying gold and silver. We like to keep things balanced. And I truly believe in anything in life, you keep things simple and basic, you'll do extremely well.
Well, I certainly agree with you. I certainly the Wellington letter, which I read, it's one of these economic newsletters, but about 10 days ago they came out and they said the stock market is going to start dropping. Get out. And, of course, it's been fascinating to see what's happening to the market here over the last couple of weeks. And it is really a very, very sick stock market. And, of course, you'll notice it's obvious it's being manipulated. It'll go down 120 points, and then they'll bring it up just at the end of the day, so it's all only off maybe 5 points, or it'll be up 3 or 4 points, or up 20 points, and down 15 points. They're trying to keep this thing from collapsing, and they're doing it simply by manipulation, but they can't let the American people know that, of course, the Plunge Protection Team, also known as the Working Group on Financial Markets, is manipulating the stock market. And it's perfectly legal because they're operating under a presidential directive signed by Ronald Reagan, but they ought to tell the American people what they're doing. And the tragedy is they refuse to let the American people understand that the game is rigged. And if you know how it's going to happen, you can do very, very well if you're one of the elite. And if you don't know what's happened, you're going to get fleeced like the poor people who go up to Las Vegas.
I think a lot of the American people realize, or they might not realize, but they know something's going on. They're tired. They're worn out. They don't have any options. They have very little hope. Their faith isn't strong. And I think a lot of them feel hopeless. I think they feel there isn't anything that they can do. But for those that are listening, there is something you can do. You can take control. You can take control of your finances. You don't have to listen to these financial planners. You don't have to keep your money in a point, in a place if you can have access to it and move it. And, if they tell you no or you shouldn't do that, it's your fund. You can do with it what you want. And so many times these financial planners intimidate their clients, and they're almost to the point where they don't want to say anything against or go against their wishes, but and I hear that day in and day out. Well, they told me I can't have it, or, you know, I can't have it for a month, or they want me to do this and they want me to do that. Well, folks, you can control your finances, and you can make good decisions if you have the facts and you know what's going on out there and be informed. You can make do just as well as they can do it. In fact, you can do a whole lot better.
In fact, very often they'll talk about, you know, comparing some guy who takes a dart, you know, and posts those pages of the Wall Street Journal up there and throws the dart, and wherever it hits, he buys it. They usually do better than the financial planners do. The only time I ever had any real personal help from a financial planner, it was all wrong. In fact, it was the vice president of a major stockbroker's house came on and told me to don't buy, I think it was Memorex stock or something. It was down to $2 a share, and he gave me all the reasons why not to buy it, and when he got all done, I said, fine, will you buy me 10,000 shares at $2? And he said, I've told you why it's not going to go up. Well, eventually he sold it for about $20 a share. So usually the financial experts are wrong. Right now, ladies and gentlemen, you need to protect your savings, and that's why, of course, Melody suggests gold and silver. And I think it's an excellent idea. It's something to be valued no matter what happens to the market. It'll always hold value. We'll be right back. Well, Melody, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I'd like to give my phone number, 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And I often offer to look at the portfolios that people have in the gold and silver coins. And sometimes things can be adjusted so they'll have a little bit better performing portfolio. Sometimes they can eliminate product that haven't done well. If they bought, you know, someplace and it's not doing anything at all, I would suggest to change it and get out of it. But really, truly, again, as I say, take a simple, basic, and a balanced approach to your precious metals. You should have 80% in gold, 20% in silver. And again, those are percentages in which, you know, for people who are starting out, and if you have a different investment objective, then that's fine, you know. But I believe if you're looking for stability, you need to have gold in your portfolio. This is a monetary problem, and gold is a monetary metal. And silver will do well. Silver is more of a speculative. It's industrial. So you'll have a little more volatility with silver, but it's important to have. And I always put together portfolios based on the suitability of the clients because everyone differs. Jim is not the same as Joe, so we take that approach and we put together coins based on each individual. So I encourage everyone to call. We don't have any minimums. We work with everybody because I believe it's important for everybody to be prepared no matter what they can do. Gold and silver is a great savings account. It's a great way to have a savings. And for those who want to distribute wealth further down the line, it's the most private place where you can put your funds. So you can give us a call. Visit our website at discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net. Well, our guest this evening has been Melody Cederstrom. We've been talking about what is taking place in the financial markets, and believe me, every week the word is things are getting worse. Of course, you have to read between the lines. You have to understand what's happened to our major corporations. You need to understand that we are selling off the infrastructure of this country. We're selling our seed corn. Our corporations are being purchased here. Major corporations are coming in from overseas and buying up major corporations here, sometimes keeping them here, other times transferring the machinery overseas. But with each one of these things that's happening, we move closer to this point where, of course, we collapse the middle class. And that's what it's really all about. I'm firmly convinced this is an effort to redistribute the wealth of the American people and collapse the middle class here. Hang on just a moment, Melody. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Melody, I want you to get your telephone number and website up one more time before we let you go to bed.
That's 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. The website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And our email is discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com.
Good night. God bless. Talk
good
to
night.
You later.
God bless.
Bye.
You too, Dr.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, fine. That was Melody. And we always enjoy having Melody on with us. We hope you do as well. And we have Melody and Sidney Bob, Ron Brown on. And both of them, I personally believe, are very responsible individuals, or we certainly wouldn't have them on our program. Well, let me, of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners, Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there across America listening to us and you agree that there really is a very serious problem, we do hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do, 5 hours a day and then our weekend program. I should point out that we have now over 60 outlets every single week. Some of them are internet, some of them are shortwave, some of them are satellite, but we have these outlets and we're just blessed and fortunate to have them. Now, then, of course, I do want to mention that I do hope that many of you will go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. We've got a new section there. My son's put it up. It's called not videos, but other videos, and we have some excellent little short YouTube or Google videos there, which, of course, will give you tremendous insight on specific issues. And then, of course, we hope that you'll listen to our programs. We actually have our programs running 4 hours a day. Previously, they were only 3 hours a day, but they're going to be archived, so you can pull them down for a few weeks after the program. The MP3s are there. And now we've also started running our Saturday program as well, so you can hear the program we do on Saturday anywhere in America, any time of the day or night. So we're doing everything we can to get the information out. I've done 9 hours of talk radio today. They started at 5 o'clock this morning, 5 to 7, 7 to 8. We did a program in Birmingham, England at noon. We did a program from 3 to 5. We did one from 5 to 6 on the Micro Effect News Network. And, we're doing all we can. Your job is to tell people they've got to listen to Radio Liberty. Your job is to pull down our newsletters and duplicate them. We're going to be sending out a flyer with our next newsletter that we hope you'll duplicate and pass out in front of the malls. Pass it out at the flea market. Pass it out in front of the grocery store. Try to get people to understand that the media is controlled, and if they want to maintain their future, they're going to have to, of course, listen to Radio Liberty and get the information, the news behind the news, the story behind the story. And then, of course, my producer just said that America's future can be as bright as the promises of God, and that really is true. The only trouble is God, of course, was also will bring judgment on a nation that turns against him. And America's turned against him, so we're going to have a revival. It's really a spiritual battle. If you haven't heard my talk on the Forbidden Secret, you need to get it because it'll explain much of what's going on. The Forbidden Secret, which comes with the syllabus. The Planned Police State talk, which comes with the syllabus. The Brotherhood of Darkness talk, which comes with a book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. And then, of course, we do hope that you'll want to get the Megiddo films, the Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. Really, it's the biblical story and how it applies to today. And then, of course, the DVDs, the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings and Riddles in Stone, and finally, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. We also hope maybe you'll want to get the story, the true story of the execution of Martin Luther King and who did it. And it wasn't James Earl Ray. And the book that goes with that, An Act of State. Anyway, please pray for America. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV. War. Thank you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful blue globe floating through the void of Yah's creation, it is Wednesday, the 25th of June, 2008. And if you're out there on the West Coast and you heard about the mayors having their meeting, well, guess what? You want to go out.